Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, January 21st, 2026, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND for 30 days, and also on my YouTube channel at Radio Naturopath. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult your physician. All right, so interesting health reports. Number one, I have osteoarthritis in my knees. I decided that I would go back to Dr. Zach Moss over at UConn, and I wanted to talk to him about kicking the possibility of getting patellar replacements in my knees down the road. My left knee, even though I have bone on bone from my femurs to my patellas in both legs, my left knee doesn't bother me. Even though my left leg is still bothering me from the femoral neuralgia, the left knee doesn't really bother me. The right knee, I think, is more compromised. It's more stiff, it gets swollen more easily, it hurts more often. And Dr. Scott, my chiropractor, his theory is that the right leg is taking on the excess of what my left leg can't do. My right knee is a little more compromised. So I went to Dr. Zach, and the thing is, I was so impressed. I called on Monday, I got in on Wednesday, and I went back on Friday. I mean, of the same week. How does that even happen? So maybe because it was a simple follow-up followed by a procedure. So this is what happened. I talked to Dr. Moss about the possibility of injections. And I told him I'm not interested in cortisone. I'm not in enough pain for cortisone. And I wasn't particularly swollen. I was interested in either hyaluronic acid or PRP. So hyaluronic acid is something that your body does make, but you can also ingest and you can also put on topically and you can also inject. And it is a lubricant as well as a humectant. It draws water to it. If you get lotion, you will often find it has hyaluronic acid in it, and especially if you get face lotion. Hyaluronic acid may be one of the ingredients. And what's great about it is it draws water to it. It's not acidic. It doesn't burn you or anything. It's very nice. And if I have hyaluronic acid, I have a face lotion that has hyaluronic acid in it, and I have a lip balm that has hyaluronic acid in it. And they're great because they're very moisturizing. So that's what they do for your knees. Then there's PRP, which you've heard me talk about before, platelet-rich plasma. They take a sample of your blood and they spin it down to separate it. So they separate the red elements from the white elements, and they concentrate the platelets. And then they inject it back into you. That's what PRP is. So the idea is that the PRP, the platelets, are going to go in and they're going to stimulate healing. And they're great for reducing inflammation, promoting healing. I had read that if you don't have particularly cartilage in your knees, that it doesn't work as well as if you do. And that was what I asked Dr. Zach. I said, I know I'm bone on bone. Is it still going to be helpful for me? And he said, yes, it still can be helpful, that because it does go around and do a lot of neat anti-inflammatory stuff. And I said, which do you think would be better for me, hyaluronic acid or PRP? He said he thought the PRP. The thing with PRP is you do have to pay for it. If you go to the stem cell research place, they don't take insurance. But if you go to a doctor that is in network and takes insurance, then you pay for your visit. And then the only thing you pay for is the PRP, because it's not covered by insurance because it's considered to be experimental. However, UConn thinks it's a good thing. So Dr. Zach said that he thinks it's worth a try. He said, would you like to try it? I said, yes. Would you like to come Friday? So this is last Wednesday. He said, would you like to come this Friday? I said, okay. I had read, so this is really fun. So I got my appointment for Friday at the end of the workday. It was nice because I didn't know how I was going to respond and if I would be laid up for the weekend. He said, if you're laid up, it's only going to be for a couple of days. You'll be able to be back to work the following week. But that's probably not even going to happen either. So then I went and did a funny thing. I went on the internet And I went to Reddit to see what people's experience was with PRP. And I saw all these posts about how they got PRP and it really, really hurt when it went in. And it didn't, some of them said it really helped them and other people said it didn't help. But the big thing was that they had a lot of pain when it went in. They had extreme swelling and it really hurt them. So I'm like, oh my God, I don't know what's going to happen. I better come prepared. So I have a walker that my beloved friend Kate loaned to me. And I still have it from, I think I've had it, we've had it since April. And she hasn't asked for it back, so, because we still use it periodically. So I grabbed the walker, and I took Tylenol with me, intending to take 1,000 milligrams before he did it. And I brought the walker with me, and so there's a lovely woman named Jessica who escorts you in. And she said, why do you have a walker? I said, well, I read on Reddit that I could be in a lot of pain and I might have trouble walking when I leave. So I brought the walker. And I'm not sure if she laughed, but she definitely eye rolled. So that was very funny. And then I told her I was, she asked me how I was today. And I said, I'm scared because I don't know how much pain I'm going to be in. She said, oh, come on. She said, have you ever had a vaccination before? I said, yes. She said, well, it's like that. You're just getting a needle. That's all it is. The needle might hurt, but after that, you're going to be okay. I said, you sure? She said, yeah, I'm pretty sure. So she took me in, she got me set up. And then a nurse and then another nurse came in. The blood draw is done in a special way because they have to get it into a special tube. So I got to lie down. I couldn't really see what they were doing. They were just taking my blood. And they said, you're going to have a little bruise there. I said, you know, not a problem. I've had bruises from having blood drawn before. I'm not worried about it. So they took a little bit of time. And the one lady had to call another lady in to make sure it was done right. They got the blood out of me. And then when they were done, they took it out of the room. And then they went, what they do is that they take it and they go and they spin it down and prepare it. I don't know if they spin it down and then they pull out the white elements and concentrate it. That's probably what happens. There's an additional concentration procedure that they do. So then Jessica came back and she got me and she brought me to the room where it happens. And it was a different room and there was a little bed and there was a little towel for me to lay my leg on. And I said, can I lay down now? She said, absolutely. And I got all set up. And then nice Dr. Zach came in. He said, I heard you read on Reddit. And I said, yes, I did. And he said, whose walker is this? I said, this is for me in case I'm in a lot of pain. He said, you're not going to be in a lot of pain. Don't worry about it. You shouldn't read Reddit. It was very funny. And so I got eye rolled and I got mild amusement from Dr. Zach as well. And I said, should I take Tylenol before we do this? And he said, don't take the Tylenol now. See if you're in pain. If you're in pain later, go ahead and take the Tylenol. So I lay down and he took the vial. He said, this is what your money paid for. And he showed me this vial with the white elements. And, then he has an ultrasound that he looks at my knee with. And I said, while you're doing this, just explain to me what you're doing, like I'm a resident. And he said, okay, well, this is the ultrasound. This is what your knee looks like inside. And you're going to see the needle coming in from the left of the screen. And in fact, the injection came in above my knee. It was like, maybe an inch or two above my knee on the lateral side, on the right-hand side of my right knee. And I could see it going in. When it went in, it definitely did hurt. It wasn't like through the roof hurt. It was uncomfortable. But it went in. And then he did the injection. And then after a second or two, he said, we're done. And I said, really? That's it? And so I did not have extreme pain going in. And I mean, the only pain was the needle. And it was manageable. It wasn't a big deal. It was like, you catch your breath a little bit, but that was it. And he said, okay, so you might experience some swelling and I would like you to move it. And I said, is it okay if I have acupuncture today? Because I had acupuncture scheduled with Nicole later on. And he said, yes, you can have acupuncture, but if you're going to be, I said, I'm going to lie down for an hour and a half. He said, well, if you're going to do that, I would like you to move this knee beforehand, I said, well, I can get on the bike trainer for a bit before I go for the visit. He said, yes, do that, 20, 30 minutes. So I wound up doing, I think, 20 minutes. Before I did that, I went to the drugstore and, you know, picked up a med. And while I was standing in line, I just did leg extensions. I stood against the side, the wall, and they have the display is there. And I did some leg extensions, so I kept moving it. And then I got home, and I did 20 minutes on the bike. And then I went for acupuncture. And he said that I could continue to, I should exercise, I should move it, but I shouldn't go hard, that whatever exercise I do, I need to be able to talk. So we're talking 60-70% max. And I said, how long? And he said, the time does not matter. It's the intensity. So if you want to go for an hour or more, you can. You just need to be able, it needs to be low intensity. If you can get on a flat road and do that, that's fine. Well, I don't have a fat bike, so I wasn't going to be riding on any flat roads outdoors. So I rode in Watopia and New York and the McCurry Island. Well, no, I think we did Watopia and New York City this weekend.
I rode that way this morning in spin class.
Yeah.
Zone two.
You love zone two. Because you're exhausted.
It's supposed to be a recovery day.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a recovery day. Yes. So I did an hour on Sunday. I did a shorter, I went for like half an hour on Saturday and did my PT exercises afterwards. And today I just did 20 minutes thinking I was going to do my PT exercises, but I didn't get around to it. So I'm going to do those later because I got all kinds of stuff to do today. So I'm continuing to move it. I'm going to get, increased exercise. And tomorrow I'm probably not going to get on the bike because it's a work day. And so I'll just make sure that while I'm sitting, that I just do some leg extensions and that I get up and walk around a lot. I do have some noticeable swelling in the knee. It's not red, but it is a little bit swollen. And he said if I wanted to, I could ice it. I understood you're not supposed to ice or heat it afterwards, but he said it's fine to ice it. So I iced it once. I probably should ice it again. I didn't ice it last night. But it is not, I mean, if I'm sitting still, it's not painful at all. It's mildly sore sometimes. It's fine when I'm on the bike. So what he said is it's a slow burn and I can expect pain relief over the course of a couple of weeks. So that was it. So the people who report that it really hurts them when they get the injection are probably getting it injected into a tendon. He said it's very different from getting injection in a tendon versus getting injection in joint space. And I was in joint space, so it really wasn't a big deal at all. I was able to go, I was able to do the things I had planned to do afterwards, go to the drugstore and then go off to Nicole's and, I don't remember if I did some yoga. I might have done some gentle yoga after that. No, I don't think I did. But I did gentle yoga yesterday and the day before. I don't know if I'll get around to it because today we're going to the chiropractor. And when I go to the chiropractor, I am not to do yoga or exercise afterwards. I have to get my exercise in before. And I'm hoping later today I'll do my PT exercises before chiropractic. So that's what happened. So I'll tell Dr. Scott how that went. So that was exciting. And the next thing that happened is I went to the eye doctor. And that was exciting. And because the eye doctor for me is usually uneventful, they check my prescription for the last 6 or 8 years. I've had the same prescription and have not needed to get new glasses. In fact, I went to the optician and said, can you please tighten my glasses for me? And he said, sure. So he tightened my glasses and it feels like you have new glasses when you get glasses tightened. So it was great. But this is the first time I went to the eye doctor where they found something. So what they found is that I have narrow angles. So narrow angles means that your iris and your lens are close together. So your aqueous humor that may not be able to drain properly. That puts you at higher risk of having acute closed angle glaucoma, which is a vision-threatening medical emergency. And I had no idea that I had this. This meant that for the first time that I've ever gone to the eye doctor, they did not dilate me, because dilating you puts you at higher risk for that. And so the thing is, if you have acute closed angle glaucoma, you could die. I'm sorry, not die. You could go blind. So I said, really? And they said, yes, you're going to have to see. They didn't say, well, we have to get you into the ophthalmologist on an emergency basis. They just said, we have to get you into the ophthalmologist. And they explained to me that I would have to have an iridotomy. An iridotomy is where they make a little hole in your iris and it makes the aqueous humor drain and then you're all set. I don't have glaucoma because I had talked to other people about it. I don't actually have glaucoma. I have just the narrow angles. Glaucoma is the definition is you have increased intraocular pressure. When you have increased intraocular pressure for whatever reason, it can damage your optic nerve and that's how you lose your vision. So I don't have increased intraocular pressure and, you know, I'm taking a lot of things that lower intraocular pressure, which I'll get into. I think I'm going to do a piece on glaucoma next week. So anyway, so they said that you have to see the ophthalmologist. And then when I went to schedule with the ophthalmologist, so the thing is this practice, and this is, you find this with a number of practices, they've got a whole bunch of optometrists and no ophthalmologist that's there regularly. A couple years back when I went to the practice, I always saw the ophthalmologist, and now that's not the case. You see the optometrist, and they have floating ophthalmologists for the practice. So they couldn't get me into the ophthalmologist until March. And then when I read about narrow angle and the risk, that really scared me. So I called them again and they said, well, we'll put you on a waiting list. They were able to get me a visit for Wednesday coming, but I couldn't do it because I have a root canal scheduled at too close to when they wanted me to do it. So I'm on a waiting list. Meanwhile, I have a visit for March, which is really kind of scary that I have to wait that long. And so what I did is I started calling around and I got an online visit with a practitioner from Hartford Healthcare, and she's going to look for me. She's going to send out a referral to a number of ophthalmological practices to see if they can get me in sooner. I called another ophthalmological practice. They said, we can see you in April. I called another practice and they didn't call me back. So this is really freaky, you know. So I had a lovely conversation with my girlfriend last night out in Arizona, and she told me I had that. I said, you're kidding. I had exactly the same thing about 5 years ago, and it was the same thing. They told me I have narrow angle. I did not have increased intraocular pressure. I was afraid I was going to lose my vision. The whole deal was exactly the same. They managed to get her in a couple weeks. And she said, what, because you're not supposed to hang out with your pupils dilated. So you're not supposed to be in low light conditions. You can't do cannabis. You can't do any drugs that dilate your eyes. So you can't do ecstasy or LSD, anything that dilates your eyes, you can't do. They didn't dilate my eyes to look in them for the first time. So anyway, so I just have to kind of pray. Now, when I talked to the practitioner last night, she said that the fact that I have normal intraocular pressure is good, so this is less likely to happen to me. Meanwhile, I'm on a quest to find an ophthalmologist who I could see sooner rather than later. And once you get the iridotomy, you're good to go. You know, then you're not at risk anymore. And I'm taking so many things that help to lower intraocular pressure. And, you know, diet and lifestyle keep your intraocular pressure low. I don't smoke. And I like I said, there's a lot of supplements that help with your eye health that I've been taking for years. So I don't have cataracts and I don't have glaucoma, but I have these narrow angles. How do you get narrow angles? In my case, probably I just aged because they didn't tell me I had it last year. It was the same with Stephanie. Last year we didn't have it, and this year we had it. You know, the last year when I went for my checkup last year, there was no sign of it, and this year all of a sudden there is. So when you have presbyopia, which I have, as you can see, I'm wearing reading glasses, you're more likely to get it because your lens is a little bit bigger. Your lens it elongates as you get older, and it makes it harder to see, and so you have to wear reading glasses, I definitely have that. And also being female for some reason makes you more likely to have it happen, and being older. So I got those three risk factors. Also being Asian, there's a couple of other risk factors that I don't have, but my risk factors, I am older, I am female, and I have presbyopia. So Anyway, so wish me luck. Let everybody pray that I get into an ophthalmologist sooner rather than later. And
you'll be fine.
And Ron says I will be fine, and Amy says I'll be fine. So, but they,
well,
they,
there you have it. The day and the night furniture both agree.
Yeah, that I'll be fine. Let's hope.
Right.
So I had another condition when I went there. They said you have Demodex. And I had been told by Dr. Cowfold a number of years ago that I have Demodex. And he just said, just use some baby shampoo and clean your eyelids. Well, I didn't really take care of it. I mean, I clean my face and my eyes pretty much every day with a washcloth and soap. But I wasn't doing any special care for Demodex. But they looked and said, you have Demodex. We're going to prescribe you this drug, that these eye drops that kill Demodex, and it's called Xdemvy. It's very funny because the ad on TV has Betsy Sodaro in it, who's a hilarious comedian. She's in that sitcom called Disjointed, and she's also she's one of the cholera ghosts in the sitcom Ghosts, and she does stand-up. She also had a brief role as a janitor in the new Night Court. So anyway, she's in this ad and she plays a mite. So what the heck is Demodex? Demodex are little mites and they live on our skin, and it's delightful. And if you have an overgrowth of Demodex on your eyelashes, you will get little collarettes of the proteins that they secrete, and they'll be able to see the actual mites. And you can also lose your eyelashes. I don't have a lot of eyelashes. It's hard for me to tell because I'm fair and my eyelashes have always been light anyway. So I didn't realize that this was a thing going on. And then I realized, you know what? My eyes do feel a little itchy crusty at times, and I get mild blurry vision, not enough blurry vision to get this acute angle glaucoma, but they do get a little bit blurry, and it kind of comes and goes. And with Demodex, that would make sense. When you have an acute angle glaucoma attack, you get a terrible headache, you get nausea and vomiting, and you can't see, and you know something's really wrong. When you get blurring from Demodex, you have a little, oh, my vision's a little blurry. What's going on with that? Because I thought it was just my floaters. But then when I wash my eyes, it gets better. So that's the Demodex doing that. So Demodex you have to take care of it because they can scratch your cornea and they can affect your vision, and they can make you lose your eyelashes. And you need eyelashes to keep crud out of your eyes. So so the Demodex I'm not as worried about. So they prescribed this drug for me. I'm still waiting for them to tell me that the drug is in. Meanwhile, what kills Demodex, hygiene, like if you just use soap and water regularly, it can be helpful. What really helps it, it seems to be that tea tree oil is as good as this drug that they're giving me to kill the Demodex. And if I had known that, I would have been washing my eyes with tea tree oil. But you can't get straight up tea tree oil, of course. You can purchase wipes that are infused with tea tree oil and other things. There's a terpenol, I think it's terpenol 4, that directly kills the Demodex. And it's been studied to be it works very well. And it doesn't say that one is better than the other, that tea tree oil just really helps. So while I'm waiting for this drug to come through, I ordered some inexpensive 120 wipes on Amazon, and I got the tea tree oil wipes, and I used the one for the first time last night, and my eyes felt so refreshed. It was very nice. I think the other thing to do is, so I'm going to use the wipes every night for a number of months. I'm going to, if I don't have the drug by the time I see Dr. Patton this Friday, because I do have another appointment with Dr. Patton, the optometrist, but I don't have it by then, I'm going to say, can I just do the tea tree oil wipes, and see how that works, because they're supposed to work really well, and I have them, and they're going to last me 4 months. And the Xdemvy you use for 42 days. That's it. So I don't know what she'll say. We'll see. And if the drug comes through, I'm not sure what I'm going to do. I guess it'll depend on the copay. But anyway, so that was exciting. You have Demodex. You have to treat your Demodex. So just so you know, the Demodex also can overgrow on your face. And when it overgrows on your face, you can get rosacea. So if you've been diagnosed with rosacea, that's one of the mechanisms that you have rosacea. And you will sometimes be given topical ivermectin, which will kill the Demodex. You can also be given tea tree oil wipes. Tea tree oil wipes will kill Demodex on your face as well. And I've had patients be offered tea tree oil wipes for their facial rosacea. I don't think I have rosacea. I don't see the excess redness like I have rosacea, but apparently I have it in my eyes. So for now, I'm going to use the tea tree oil wipes, and we'll see about using the Xdemvy. So that was exciting. Then the other thing is I still have pressure and discomfort in my left leg. One of the things that Dr. Moss had said to me when I told him how I was feeling with my left leg, he said, oh, the laminectomy didn't work, and that upset me. So anyway, I have an appointment with the neurosurgeon in a week and a half to get that checked out and possibly get another MRI to see what's going on. So Deb writes in that Dr. Cowfold diagnosed Xdemvy for her, and she's had the issues in the fall, and the Xdemvy worked really well for her. So that's really good, and she was interested about the tetriol. Very good. So she sees Dr. Cowfold. I called down there to try to get into Dr. Cowfold. They said April. So the practice I'm in said March. So good old Dr. Cowfold. I used to enjoy seeing him because I saw him when he was at Wyndham Eye Group. I don't see him anymore. So good for you, Deb. That's great that the Xdemvy worked for you. So maybe I should try it. You know, I'm all for trying things as long as they don't hurt me, right? So that's what's going on. So the next thing I have to do is figure out what's going on with my leg. Am I going to need a new MRI? I added something very interesting, which is BPC-157. That's body protective compound 157. It's a peptide. And so it has a number of amino acids in it that make it into a peptide. And it helps with all kinds of inflammation and healing. And I was hoping that maybe it would do something to heal my nerve. The only issue is if something's still sitting on the nerve can only heal so much. So that's what I have to find out with the next MRI. So that's what's going on with our health. Ron is still dealing with his neck. When we got back from Florida, he had more neck soreness, and he's tired right now. So that's what's going on. All right, so let's talk about some other things now. Let's talk about the new upside-down food pyramid. Very interesting. So what do you think of the upside-down food pyramid? And so... There are dietitians who are criticizing it, and there are those who are excited about it. So the food pyramid recommends increasing your daily consumption of protein, fruits, vegetables, and whole grains while decreasing the amount of refined carbohydrates, sugar, and highly processed foods. Good advice, right? Experts say the revised guidelines offer helpful nutrition advice, but they're concerned about the inclusion of red meat as a primary protein source. So the federal officials have released the 2025 through 2030 dietary guidelines for Americans that emphasize the importance of protein, fruits, vegetables, and whole grains. The new inverted food pyramid structure places dairy products like cheese near the top, while encouraging a reduction in highly processed foods, carbohydrates, and sugars, which are positioned near the bottom. So the 10-page guidelines mark a shift from current alcohol recommendations, making them more generalized as opposed to specific limits on how many drinks per day males and females should have. These guidelines return us to the basics, Health and Human Services Secretary RFK Jr. said. Households must prioritize whole nutrient-dense foods, protein, dairy, vegetables, fruits, healthy fats, and whole grains, and dramatically reduce highly processed foods. This is how we make America healthy again. So far, the dude has a point, quite honestly.
Mm-hmm.
So these guidelines have been met with a lot of criticism. The group expressed concerns. The Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine commended the guidelines for limiting certain fats and alcohol consumption while emphasizing produce, but they expressed concerns about the recommendations regarding meat and dairy products. They said they're also worried about the influence certain industries may have had on the guideline decisions.
Well,
Their right to limit cholesterol raising saturated fat, But they should spell out where it comes from, dairy products and meat primarily. And here the guidelines err in promoting meat and dairy products, which are the principal drivers of cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and obesity. Well, you heard it here. I don't entirely agree with that. That dairy products will drive obesity if you eat too much of them, and they will also be problematic if you are dairy intolerant. So if you're not dairy intolerant, eating some dairy is probably a good thing. Will it give you cardiovascular disease? That's if you believe that Ansel Keys was right. So if you believe that saturated fat is what causes cardiovascular disease, then you're going to be concerned about dairy. I'm on the fence about dairy because you don't have to eat dairy to live. We didn't eat the dairy of other species after the age of weaning until 5 or 6,000 years ago, and we've been in this form as humans for about 200,000 years. So if you never ate dairy again, you would be fine. On the other hand, we have a tradition in our culture that we do eat dairy, and if you have healthy parameters, then dairy can be a good food for you. I don't think it's a good idea to eat dairy as your primary protein source. I think if you're not a vegetarian, then eating animal protein, it's better to eat animal protein as your primary protein source. So the thing is, all of these recommendations are nuanced. So first of all, in terms of red meat, I'm a person that I don't tolerate red meat well. So I don't eat a lot of it. I mean, I can eat a processed meat stick like Ron just did, as long as it's healthy.
That's a good one.
But yeah, so he's got it. He's doing a meat stick because he's hungry and he wants a snack. But you see, so first of all, red meat, if you are not intolerant to it, then if you eat CAFO meat, meat that comes from some commercial food operations, that's a problem because those animals are given grain to eat. And cattle should not be eating grain. They should be eating grass, and they are going to have poor quality fat in their flesh, and they're going to have more trans fats in their flesh and arachidonic acid, omega 6 fatty acids. So if you're eating meat that's high in arachidonic acid, the arachidonic acid is inflammatory. It's not because it's saturated. Saturated fat isn't nearly as problematic as arachidonic acid is, as omega-6 fatty acids are. And if you have an animal that's been eating corn, its flesh is going to be higher in arachidonic acid, and it's going to be more inflammatory. That is a problem. And if most people are not being careful to buy grass-fed and finished beef because it's more expensive, then eating animal protein, eating cows is a problem. So eating beef is a problem if you're eating poor quality conventional meat, then it will increase your risk of cardiovascular disease. I don't believe that grass-fed and finished beef will increase your risk of cardiovascular disease, but not everybody can afford it. So if you talk to people about eating grass-fed beef, if you're going to eat beef, you should only eat grass-fed and finished beef. And they say, I can't afford it. Then my thought is either eat extremely lean beef or skip the beef altogether because you are going to have a problem with the arachidonic acid. So, in terms of dairy, the saturated fat in dairy is probably not going to be a problem. Now, if you're really, there's the whole controversy about whether having high cholesterol is really a bad thing. If your cholesterol is small and dense and oxidized, it's a problem and you want to get it down. Do you want to get it down if you have a history of cardiovascular disease? Maybe. But if you have high LDL, but you also have very low triglycerides and high HDL, then you're not going to have, your cholesterol is not going to give you cardiovascular disease. The problem is that they have lowered the LDL reference range so low that it's very difficult for most people to have their cholesterol within normal range. So that means that pretty much everybody gets to go on statins. And my patients, I've had patients go to their doctors, their LDL is 115 and they're offered statins. And I'm like, they have normal triglycerides, they have high HDL. And, you know, once you have cardiovascular disease, they want to see your LDL at 55, which is incredibly low. And you have to remember that cholesterol helps you to make cell membranes. It's a precursor to vitamin D. It's a precursor to hormones. And it's necessary for a lot of body functions. And people who take statins often don't feel good, because when you're moving your body, when you're moving your joints, your muscles have to regenerate, and they need cholesterol to be able to do that. So if you block the production of cholesterol, then you don't get as good muscle regeneration, and you have joint pain and body aches, which a lot of people get. You also, because you can't make good cell membranes, you can't get sugar to pass through your in and out of your cells as easily, and you can't get insulin to bond as well. So you wind up having increased blood sugar. And when you have increased blood sugar in your brain, what do you get? You get dementia. So that's very concerning. So that's my concern about reducing cholesterol with drugs. What their concern is that they're promoting all these meat and dairy products. If somebody has excessively high cholesterol and they go off dairy and their cholesterol tends to go down, they might want to watch how much dairy fat they eat. I think that's true of me. If I don't do a lot of dairy fat, but I don't think I digest dairy that well either. And I mostly don't eat red meat just because it doesn't agree with me. I'm not drawn to it. So if you wind up eating, you know, free range chicken and a lot of fish, that's going to be better for you. And that level of eating more protein, that recommendation to eat more protein, I think is a good idea. I think people don't get enough protein, and what they do eat too much. RFK Jr. is not wrong about this. People eat too much ultra processed food, and they eat too much starch and sugar. I've been saying this, you've heard me say this for years, and they don't eat enough protein. And if you eat adequate protein through the day, you're not going to be as hungry. Your weight's going to tend to be lower. And you're going to tend not to want to reach for the saturated fat, refined carbohydrates, the refined starches and sugars. So otherwise, the American Heart Association found RFK Jr.'s new guidelines to be on the right track. And the inclusion of several important science-based recommendations, like the emphasis of vegetables, fruits, and whole grains while limiting consumption of added sugars, refined grains, highly processed foods, saturated fats, and sugary drinks. A general surgeon, Mir Ali, who's a bariatric surgeon and medical director of the Memorial Care Surgical Weight Loss Center at Orange Coast Medical Center in California, said he generally supports the guidelines because they emphasize protein and vegetables over carbohydrates and sugars, and they're a step in the right direction. So how much protein should you be eating? The federal nutrition guidelines help to inform the National School Lunch Program, which provides meals to nearly 30 million children on a typical school day. So you want to prioritize protein at every meal. Consume full-fat dairy with no added sugars. Eat vegetables and fruits throughout the day, focusing on whole foods. Incorporate healthy fats from whole foods, such as meats, seafoods, eggs, nuts, seeds, olives, and avocados. Focus on whole grains while sharply reducing refined carbohydrates. One of the key recommendations in the new guidelines was to increase Americans' daily protein consumption from 0.36 grams per pound of body weight to 0.54 to 0.73 grams per pound of body weight. So that's more. So why don't you figure out, Ron, if you were going to eat 0.73 grams per pound of body weight, why don't you multiply out your body weight times 0.73 and tell me what you get?
Oh, but then I have to do grams pounds conversion.
No, you don't. No, you don't. No, you don't have to convert anything. Just multiply your weight in pounds and by 0.73. That's all you need to do.
So if I weigh...
So the federal officials urge Americans to include protein-rich foods in every meal. And the American Heart Association stated that more research is needed on protein consumption before people start changing their diets.
0.55.
So that's almost 100 grams.
Uh-huh.
Wow. So depending on your size, that you have to eat more protein. So I'm over 100 grams according to this, and I don't know that I get 100 grams of protein in a day.
And if you're athletic, it adds a new, entirely different formula into it, because I did a comparison for athletic people, my weight, and it's more like 130 grams a day.
Whoa.
Right.
That's a lot. Yeah, so that's a lot of protein. It's hard to do. You basically have to eat protein at every meal. I mean, we take I do a protein shake in the morning, and that's where we're getting our morning protein. Usually, you also eat eggs. I don't usually eat eggs, and unfortunately, I can't tolerate a lot of dairy, so I can't eat. I mean, I would eat Greek yogurt, but I can't really tolerate it. So I'll eat yogurt, but it's plant-based yogurt. It doesn't have a lot of protein in it. But I have the protein shake in the morning, which I tolerate very well. And then in the middle of the day, I'm either going to have one of those snack proteins, or I'm going to have healthy cold cuts, you know, like turkey breast, or I'm going to have tinned fish, salmon or tuna or other tinned fish. And then for supper, we have a protein-based meal. It's going to be some kind of fish. It's usually fish or poultry. Mm-hmm. Once in a while, we'll have burgers. And I haven't been doing that great with mammals since the vaccine. So when we have burgers, I have turkey burgers, which I tolerate quite well, and Ron will have the beef burgers. But I can have small amounts of beef. Like, I can have beef in a stick, and I can have a bite of a burger. I could probably have a small slider. I can do beef better if I have exercised a lot that day. But my exercise intensity, unfortunately, has gone down since I've had all this orthopedic stuff, which is so I have tended not to go for animal protein or for mammals. I tend not to eat, like if we got a deer, I would eat the deer, but I don't, it doesn't appeal to me, and I don't tolerate it.
I eat as much protein as I can get in my body every day.
And you could do that, and I don't.
I have to. I work out every day. You know, I'm always active. Right. So
yeah, I'm pretty active too. I just can only get so much in. Yeah. So, and I do better with, I mean, I'm not a vegetarian, but I could be. I play one on TV. No, I could be one because I tolerate vegetable protein very well. I tolerate all kinds of, you know, some people get a lot of gas and bloating from eating beans and nuts and seeds, and I'm not like that at all. My microbiota is set up so it's very happy eating plant-based stuff. And if I did a few days of being vegan, I would be fine. We do eat butter. I have to buy some butter. We do eat butter. We like to eat Irish butter or some kind of organic butter. I don't eat a ton of it. I eat it on the fish, and if I'm having some sourdough bread, I'll put it on the sourdough bread, but I don't put butter on most things. And probably if Ron didn't put butter on our fish and I were making the fish, I would probably not use it. I would probably use olive oil instead. But that's okay. So sugar and alcohol, the new guidelines urge Americans to sharply limit their intake of added sugars or non-nutritive sweeteners, saying no amount is considered part of a healthy diet. No meal should consist of more than 10 grams, that is 2 teaspoons of added sugar. And highly processed foods and refined carbohydrates, Americans really need to avoid packaged, prepared, ready-to-eat, or other foods that are salty or sweet, like chips, cookies, and candy. So this is a very good addition to the guidelines. The new guidelines alter previous recommendations that limit alcohol to 1 drink or less per day for females and 2 drinks or less per day for males. So, and you want to consume less alcohol for better health. Oh, this alters the previous recommendations. So you consume less alcohol. The alcohol should be avoided by pregnant people, of course. People recovering from alcohol use disorder, of course, and those who are taking medications or medical conditions that can interact with alcohol, or people who can't control how much they drink. All said, it's best to avoid alcohol in general, but abstinence is probably unrealistic, and drinking is often synonymous with socialization. So you minimize your alcohol. So you have a drink on the weekend. The idea of having a cocktail every night is probably not a good idea. I don't know what to say to that, because if you're a person who has a glass of wine every night and you have excellent parameters and you're healthy, you're probably okay, but we can't say for sure, because there are studies that show that if you drink more alcohol, you're more likely to get a number of different cancers, like oral cancers. I don't know if that's if you're drinking a lot of alcohol and you're not eating a good healthy diet. So that's hard to say. I mean, I would think that there are some people who drink alcohol every day and they're okay because everything else they do is so healthy. But if you are drinking a bit of alcohol and you know you go to the drive-thru and get the big coffee with the sugar and the cream in it and you have a donut and you're not being real great about eating produce at every meal and you're not getting all your protein in, drinking alcohol is just going to add to that. So it's probably a good idea. Less is more. So the best foods for a healthy, balanced diet are... Here's what's good for you. Protein can help build muscle, and you want to get good sources. Red meat isn't bad as long as it's not overdone, and I say that red meat is not bad if it's grass-fed and finished. And that chicken, fish, lentils, beans, and nuts are also great choices. And vegetables in general are a great component of a healthy diet, but starchy vegetables like potatoes and corn should be consumed in moderation. Which doesn't mean don't have them. If you're having, when I lived in Newfoundland, they would make a big tureen, a huge tureen, several gallons tureen with boiled potatoes in it, and people would eat tons of potatoes. If you're having a baked potato and you're not having it every day, or you're having half a baked potato, or you're having squash or sweet potato, and you're not eating a huge amount, that's probably fine. There are really good things in potatoes. But non-starchy vegetables, have at it. You can have as much as you want. And fruits have a lot of good nutrients, but are also sweeter. So what you do is you have more, you can eat as much as you want, but you have more vegetables than fruit. And berries are a good choice. This says that berries are a better choice than apples and bananas. I don't like to discourage people from, I don't know about the apple thing. I think an apple a day is a good idea. Bananas, I actually don't eat a lot of, I don't eat bananas every day. If I have a banana, I put it over my yogurt and I have half a banana. So if I have gotten a lot of exercise that day, I might eat a whole banana. But so if I'm on a big long bike ride, I might eat a whole banana. But I don't have bananas every day. I do tend to gravitate towards berries. And then you limit the intake of carbohydrate-laden foods like bread, pasta, and rice. So the way we do that is I just don't have a lot of it. I don't eat rice most days. I will have bites of rice here and there, but I prefer quinoa. And the thing with quinoa is it's a pseudo grain. It's not actually a grain. It's actually a seed. So it's lower glycemic than pasta and rice. And so when we're having a stir fry or we're having Mexican bowls or something that, you know, you would ordinarily add rice to, I have quinoa instead. And I prefer quinoa. And quinoa really agrees with me. So, I mean, I can feel that it's lower glycemic in my body and it provides a lot of fiber. And usually when I'm having, I don't tend to put it on salads, but in terms, if we're having a hot meal, like a stir fry or a bowl with, grain and beans and chicken and or fish, I have one of those, I will tend to put chia or hemp seeds on it. And I put chia seeds into my oatmeal or my yogurt, so I get more fiber that way. And then those muffins that Jackie makes at the farmer's market, she makes it from organic, homegrown, whole grain corn. Yeah. And they're very big. The muffins are very big. So Ron can eat a whole one because, you know, he has really high metabolism. But when I eat it, I cut it in half and I only have half of it. And I'm going to have half after I'm finished with my show. And it's really high in fiber. I had a really high fiber day yesterday.
That's nice, dear.
Yes, it was
very
good.
Thank you for sharing.
You bet. Yeah, because I had, what did I have? In the morning, I was very excited because I went to Aldi's and they had Florida strawberries. And Florida strawberries are in season now because we bought them when we were in Florida last week. And so they had them at Aldi's. And then we went back to Aldi's and they didn't have them. They had anemic strawberries from California. And I'm like, I'm not interested in the anemic strawberries from California. So if the Florida strawberries come back, maybe I'll get some more. And they're not necessarily organic, so I clean them off really well. I have produce wash and I use that. But I get excited for the Florida strawberries because they're not transported as far and they taste better and they're fresher than the ones coming from California. Nothing against California strawberries. They're just, you know, they're picked probably before they're ripe. and shipped out here, and they're shipped a long way. And when they come here, they're not, you know, they're not in the best nutritious condition. And the Florida strawberries are in better shape. So, all right. So that's the new upside down food pyramid. Very exciting. Okay. So we were talking about New Year resolutions that you can keep. And we got through a bunch of them. So I've got a bunch more to share with you. We had a funny thing happen. We have this nice refrigerator. When do we get that new refrigerator?
Oh, it's getting close to 2 years.
Right, now. 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. So we had this refrigerator, and Ron read that if we were going to get, I like to have an ice maker because I'm a person who likes cold water. Not everybody does, but if I have ice in my water, I'm more likely to drink it. And anything you can do to get your water down more easily, I'm a fan of. So when I have ice water, I'm more likely to drink it. And I like ice in my iced tea, and it's especially nice in the summer. But this time of year, I will put ice in my water, and I'm more likely to drink it. So Ron read that it's better to have an ice maker that's internal, where you have to grab the ice out of a bucket, rather than have it in the door. That the door one tends to malfunction more, right?
They tend to be more problematic, right. more mechanically troublesome.
Right. So we got one where the ice, the refrigerator makes the ice and it dumps it into a bucket inside. And that was great. And I'm like, this is great. You don't have to use the trays, and you don't have to, the ice is just made for you, and you can grab as much as you want whenever you want. It's so great. And so we used that for a long time. And then one day, I don't know how many months out.
Oh, it was close to a year. It was just under the warranty.
And it stopped working. And it didn't work. And Ron didn't work it out to get the guy come out to look at it. No, he did look at it once.
Yeah, oh yeah. He, not only did he look at it once, he came out, he looked at it, and he came back with a brand new ice maker and said, your ice maker is bad. We're putting a new one in. So he put in a new one under warranty, and then that one didn't work.
So now that one's bad. So then it stopped after a short while. and so after a while, Ron didn't get it together to get him to come back again. And we decided to buy a countertop ice maker, which is a thing you can get. And so that was fun. So now we have this nice countertop. It takes up space, but it makes ice for you. The only problem is the ice is soggy when it comes out, and then when you put it in the freezer, it sticks together, it freezes together, and it sticks together. So then you have to bang on it to get it to. But that was nice, and we had an ice maker, and that was fine. And we bought that ice maker months ago. I don't even remember when we bought it. So maybe less than a year ago, but close to it. And then we came back from Florida, and all of a sudden, I noticed that a couple days ago, I saw a couple of pieces of ice that were the shape of the ice maker. And Ron said, oh, those are left over from when it was making ice, because they were buried. And then all of a sudden, there was more and more and more. So all of a sudden, the ice maker just started working again. We don't know why. I don't know if there was something in the way that was blocking it or clogging it.
I replaced the filters. I tried to drain the water. I mean, I did all the things you're supposed to do when your ice maker stops working, and none of it worked.
Now it's working
again.
So
now all of a sudden, like someone snapped a finger, it works great.
It's magic. So it's the ice maker fairy came, and now our refrigerator makes ice again. So we're going to take I don't think the countertop ice maker should go far because I don't trust it.
Right. So you can always use those for like party situations.
That's true.
That's right.
You know, that's a neat thing.
We're not going to get rid of it.
No, we're just going to take it off the counter because it takes up space.
Get it out of the way because it takes up way too much space.
Right. Yeah, and the minute you take it off, I shouldn't say anything.
No.
All right. So let's talk about a few New Year's resolutions. Do you have any New Year's resolutions?
I talked about that on last week's show, actually, but you weren't here for that. I did speak about New Year's resolutions, and I think my main resolution is everyone's resolution, which I'm going to talk about that again today, because there is a period of time of which resolutions go fizzle, and it's usually January 17th. But anyway. Oh yeah.
That was Saturday.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, that's the first cutoff date. But anyway, I'll talk about it more on my show.
Okay.
which is coming up next. Yes. Anyway, so my main resolution is to get my body strong again.
Sure.
And be able to ride my bicycle everywhere I want to go without restriction.
Yeah.
And that's my resolution. I'm working on it. I'm doing a bunch of things that are painful to deal with because I am basically starting all over again with fitness in my body.
Yeah.
Which when you start all over again at 70 years of age, it's a eye-opening experience. I am very, very weak right
but
now.
It can be done.
It can be done. I've been working with Jill a little bit up at the community center because she's a bodybuilder. That's
yeah.
what she does. And she said, I'm actually in a great place for this because she said, I'm really sort of like a newbie as far as the weight thing goes. And she said, my results will be very rapid.
Right. Yeah.
Because of that. But
and you're very determined and you'll be consistent.
Yeah. So yeah. Wall sits.
I know. I'm doing those.
And leg presses. I've
those
been
are
doing
good.
Leg
if
presses.
I would go to the community center, I'd do the leg presses. But I'm doing the wall sits.
The wall sits are better for you than the leg presses are.
And the wall sits, I think they helped me because, you know, as much as I hadn't been riding my bike when we were in Florida, we rode on the Florida Hills. And Florida Hills, unless you're near Mount Dora or in the peninsula up north near Pensacola, there are no hills in Florida. So the only hills are bridges and wind.
Right.
So we were on the Legacy Trail and I climbed the bridges and I just zipped up the bridge. I was very surprised that I was able to do that as well. It's even though my leg is compromised as it is, I'm guessing my leg is not completely compromised.
We both have a certain amount of muscle memory,
yeah,
which
then
helps
that.
With that.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's, you know, it's going to be a process, but
yeah,
you know, we'll get there.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
I hope so. So I'm only have time for one resolution that I'm reading here, and that's simply to be more present in your life. That can enhance your life satisfaction, reduce your negative thoughts. That will help with your psychological well-being. Be more mindful and present, and be more present in your everyday life. So try not to think about the past. Try not to think about the future. Try to enjoy what you're doing right now.
And reading Reddit.
Stop spending less time on the phone, taking a moment to notice your surroundings, and do be aware if you are going to get PRP in a joint space, it's probably not going to hurt too much. You will have some swelling and you'll be like, oh, that's a little achy, but it's nothing you can't manage. I have a brace on it and I do ice. I'm taking all my, you know, my normal stuff. He didn't tell me I have to stop supplements or anything, even though the internet said to, but he said, don't worry about it. And I know that there's some swelling there, which you actually want some because the swelling that PRP causes is part of what does the healing. So as long as it's there and I'm able to function, I don't have anywhere near the pain that I had. I had a big flare right before my surgery. And that was really bad. I don't have anywhere near the pain. I have a little achiness when I'm still. It doesn't hurt at all. I'm able to do my PT exercises and get on the bike and do my gentle yoga. I'm able to do all that stuff. So anyway, so I have run out of time, so I'm going to let you go. So you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.